From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. Today on Dialogue, we're diving into a critical conversation about mental health in the Black community as we enter 2025. From ongoing social justice concerns to economic pressures, many are feeling the weight of life. Joining us today is Latrice Willis, a licensed therapist and owner of Brave Beginnings LLC, where she helps clients navigate life's challenges with compassion and cultural awareness. Through her practice, Willis has developed innovative approaches to mental health care that blend traditional therapy with modern wellness techniques. Welcome to the program, Latrice.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
As both a therapist and business owner, what inspired you to focus your practice on serving Black and underserved communities?
Growing up, therapy wasn't really a thing in my community, or at least I had no awareness of it. It was kind of like, you know, if you have an issue, you talk to, you know, your grown-ups at home, whether that's your parents, your grandparents, or whoever you live with. And so I don't think mental health in general was something that was broadcasted to me growing up. And so as I moved from the Chicagoland area to, you know, Champaign-Urbana, you don't see a lot of Black therapists. And so I thought it would be really great to open my own practice alongside my husband, who's also a Black male therapist in the community, because it's nice to have someone who looks like you, who understands some of the same things that you've gone through or probably are continuing to go through. And so just having that safe space with someone who understands and who's culturally competent, I think is really important, especially in the Black community.
What are you observing about the state of mental health in Black communities today that most concerns you?
You know, in general, it's really just the stigma surrounding mental health in the Black community, you know, kind of going along with, you know, when I was growing up, we didn't talk about mental health. It was like you were taught to be strong, don't show any weakness. And I think people still carry that today. It's like, well, if I have a problem, I'm not going to tell anybody about it, because I was taught, you know, what happens at home stays at home, and you will probably get in trouble for even mentioning anything that you have trouble with, or not even wanting your white counterparts knowing like what's going on, because you're either seen as weak, incompetent, not able to get the task done. And so I think that kind of steers people away from seeking mental health services.
What are the unique mental health challenges that Black communities are facing in 2025, particularly considering recent social and economic pressures?
The Black community has a lot of things to consider, you know, whether that's the current political climate and, you know, lots of uncertainty about what's going to happen in the future, or what that means for us in general. There's a lot of gun violence in our community, which, you know, creates a lot of fear, lots of trauma, along with police brutality or police involved shootings. You know, that we carry a lot of that with us on a daily basis. And so I'm scared for us, because not only do we have the stigma of mental health or seeking counseling, we have all of these other things that, you know, contribute to the ongoing trauma, and it's not being addressed because we either don't know where to go, we don't trust people due to all of these things, lots of issues with poverty or even access to resources, whether you have insurance or don't have insurance, there are barriers on both sides. And so I think all of that together really just kind of creates this sense of like being alone and just not knowing where to go.
And we often hear about generational trauma in Black communities. Could you help our listeners understand what this actually means and how it can manifest in your daily life?
Yeah, absolutely. And so generational trauma is something that's carried on from generation to generation. So for example, if there's a history of domestic violence in the home, so you've seen these things, and so maybe you think that that's how relationships are supposed to be. So you carry that on as far as like how you rear your children or in your current relationships, or if there's a family history of poverty, it just continues, the cycle continues. It's like, well, I don't know what else to do. I don't know how to, whether that's how to appropriately apply for a job, or I don't know what resources to access, or even kind of in the education, thinking about education, if my family, if I'm the first generation who's gone to college, no one before me understands what that's like, or the pressures that go along with it, or even how that impacts me going into the workforce, and what that means for relationships with my colleagues or with my peers. And so I think the idea of generational trauma, people don't know how to end the cycle. And so that's where I think, seeking mental health services will be helpful in kind of acknowledging and understanding that, and kind of help you to create tools to succeed and kind of move forward.
Can therapy be a tool for liberation?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think everyone would benefit from therapy, even myself as a therapist. I think therapy is important for me too. As far as, and I know that first step towards seeking therapy can be difficult because, again, you don't know what to do because it's not something that you were taught to do or look up. And so I think therapy can be this safe space for a person to have an unbiased opinion, or kind of learn those tools to help them to deal with those past traumas or symptoms of anxiety, depression, any trauma history. And so you learn tools in that therapy space with a trusted person. And it kind of be some a place for you to show up for yourself, and kind of a judge-free zone for you to learn new tools and kind of let go.
Could you share insights about how intergenerational trauma intersects with current global stressors and what healing approaches you found most effective?
I think a lot of what I see with some of my Black clients is it often deals with the workplace. And so just the history of racism and how that shows up in our daily lives, especially at work, because we spend most of our time at work and trying to navigate those relationships or those interactions with people. And especially if you're the only person of color in that setting, kind of how can you, for one, feel like you belong here, but history is like, well, again, we don't have access to resources. We don't have access to counseling, transportation, insurance, all of these things, an appropriate education. And so if you have a history of that, I think in today's society, it's like we kind of, again, feel lost as to who are we, how do we show up in the workplace without, people judging us or feeling like we're incompetent. And so I think therapy can kind of help us to understand, this doesn't have to be a continued cycle. We can break the cycle. We can learn different strategies to help us to evolve in with our communication skills, with our relationships, with how we feel about ourselves, lots of self-reflection, and kind of being confident in what we bring to the table.
The saying is, it takes a village. How do you address the intersection of personal healing and collective community healing? What role does community connection play? And how can people build supportive networks during these uncertain times? Whether you feel alone or you may just not feel like you have the support system that you desire.
Right. And so, of course, it's important to have things like therapy to work on yourself, and your, past traumas, or, any issues that you have, but also this sense of community, whether that's a support group or even a supportive group of friends that you trust is important, or finding that at least one colleague at work who understands, and you kind of, develop this bond of a shared experience. And I think those things are really important just to kind of get you through, because you can often feel alone. And I think just finding those connections in any way possible, whether that's, a workout, finding community within the workout at the gym, or at the library, it can be anywhere, just kind of finding that one person that you trust and you can kind of share your experience, and just have someone who can listen to you and I think that goes a long way, even if it's not traditional therapy.
And for someone who's never been to therapy but is curious, what would you recommend as their first step?
That is a great question. Because lots of people do get scared of this idea of therapy, and they look based off TV or even social media of what they think therapy is going to look like, and then they get there and it's something totally different. I think the first step is really just doing your research. If you have something in particular that you want to work on, just kind of even just going on Google and searching Black therapists or Black therapists who specialize in trauma or Black therapists in depression. I think those simple things, or even if you're not sure about therapy in general, even finding podcasts. There are several great podcasts out there where you can get a better understanding of therapy, or even just general topics that can be covered in therapy to help ease your mind and kind of get a little more education before you jump right into therapy. Because that can be very scary, very daunting, trying to share your most intimate details with a stranger. So I think just doing your research, what therapy looks like, what kinds of tools, you know, you can learn in therapy. And I tell people all the time when they meet me for the first time, you know, therapy is a process, it's a journey. And part of that journey is having the right person. So if you feel like, you know, I'm not the right therapist for you, okay, great. Let's talk about that. And, you know, let's see what we can do to get you connected with someone who would best suit your needs. And so I think even stuff like that, people knowing like this isn't the end all be all. It takes time. And the main thing is really just do your research. Psychology Today is a really great resource to, you get to see people's, their information, their pictures. Some people have videos talking about what, you know, they can offer, and just kind of looking through to see what you think would be good for you.
What are three daily practices, tools, or just grounding techniques that people can use to support their mental health or start it, even if they're not in therapy?
Yes. Meditation is really big, or even mindfulness practices. Even if you don't, you can't pay for therapy or anything like that, there are lots of great apps like Calm. They offer, you know, a selection of free mindfulness meditation exercises, or Headspace is a really good one. Even something as simple as YouTube. They have lots of different things that you can find on YouTube or other social media platforms that can help you with different grounding techniques, or even just embracing the outdoors. Grounding techniques can be anything. It can be, okay, well, this morning I'm going to focus on my breathing and how my chest rises and falls, and just kind of being more in tune to your body. So you don't really need any fancy equipment to ground yourself. And it's just really paying attention to your breathing, or creating a routine. Okay, I'm going to wake up at this time, and I'm going to start my day with a glass of water and a balanced breakfast, and just kind of creating those things and increasing it over time.
What gives you hope about the future of mental health care in Black and Brown communities?
What gives me hope? You know, being a Black therapist here in Champaign-Urbana, I am very fortunate to have met lots of other Black therapists in the community, and trying to work towards a Black therapist networking group. And so that gives me hope that we're all here to support people and support each other on this journey. And so I'm very hopeful that with connecting with others, you know, in the community, that we can help to educate others, educate the Black community that, hey, there are resources out there. We're here to help you. Just reach out to us. We got you.
For the listener who is hurting or knows someone who is hurting right now, for people nervous about what's to come in their own home or this country, what message would you give them?
You're not alone. I know it's tough, and I know a lot of things are uncertain, but we're here to support you, whether that's a therapist, whether that's family, friends, or anyone that you trust. You're not alone. This is not the end. We'll get through this together, and one day at a time.
Latrice Willis, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Stay with us on Dialogue to continue the conversation on Black mental health as we enter 2025. We'll be right back after this short break. From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. You're currently listening to an episode we recorded late last year in November of 2024. After a contentious week of the 2024 presidential elections, many African Americans posed the question, what does this mean for the future of Black America? What does it look like living in the second age of Donald Trump?
President Trump has issued another executive order, this time ending federal programs dedicated to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Employees of these programs have been put on paid administrative leave.
The president says these programs cause division, promote discrimination, and drain taxpayers' dollars.
The memo went out just one day after President Trump signed an executive order giving agencies 60 days to terminate all DEI positions.
Our country is going to be based on merit again.
Another new directive, this one released by the Department of Homeland Security, reversed a Biden-era policy prohibiting deportation agents from making arrests at sensitive locations, like schools or churches.
The celebration coming after President Trump pardoned about 1,500 criminal defendants who had been accused or convicted of crimes related to January 6th.
We are back, the patriots. We don't have to crawl in the back corners of Facebook and Instagram being censored. We've got X, we've got Trump. We've got Musk. We've got the dream team. We're back.
President Trump, I love you. We'll always have your back. You had our back. We got your back.
Joining the conversation is journalist Tanisha Spain from Illinois Public Media. She is the Mid-American Gardener show host. And this week, she sat down with Dr. Lisa Chambers, who's a psychologist and lecturer in higher education at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Parkland College.
Welcome, Dr. Lisa. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
I'd like to know, on the pre-election, what sort of things were you hearing from minorities, people of color, specifically Black people? What did this election sort of bring to the forefront that you've seen in people?
Hope, promise, concern, excitement, a whole host of different emotions that made me think that people were anticipating a positive outcome for them because they could see themselves in Vice President Harris, especially Black women. I saw this newfound strength, especially in Black women. I saw women coming together, women raising money for this dynamic woman, the second woman to run for presidency, which is something that we didn't necessarily see the first time when Hillary Clinton ran. Money was raised. I saw a lot of positivity in mental health that I hadn't seen in a while, and it made me excited, obviously being able to identify with our vice president.
Now, have you seen people coming in wanting to talk about politics more? Let's say if they are discussing mental health, has that crept into the discussion? And that could be on the positive side, where we just talked about when the announcement came and people did have that hope. Do you see politics creeping more into people's mental health discussion?
Yes, yes, yes. From every aspect, from sadness to anxiety to tension to anger to a variety of feelings. I saw an increase in just people discovering politics and feeling good about politics and being energized and excited. There was no excitement, as much excitement, when she was not a candidate. The excitement came, more conversations started, and more energy occurred once she decided to run for office.
So when you have people who have had hope for all of this time, and then you get there and the outcome is not what you expected as a community, you know, 92% of Black women, 80-some percent of Black men, what does that do to a person? And what can we expect to feel and to think on the other side of that?
Shock. I think the election grief or the sadness because the outcome was not what over 60 million people wanted. I think that there is no comfort in that grief. And that's the problem. Many of us were feeling very charged up. And then to lose in a landslide when you had 75,000 people in crowds, when you saw the other side with minimal crowds, trying to figure out what happened. That's what I'm seeing now. More people are trying to understand it, but what we don't realize is that that's causing more anxiety, more anger, more outrage. And I would like to, at some point, discuss what we need to do about that, because I'm starting to see many people taking off work, tears. I'm here and my phone just completely after the election continuously rang from friends and colleagues and different news media asking, well, what happened and what are we supposed to do and how do we handle it? So now I'm seeing Black people in particular go from feeling excited and then there's the election and then bam, everything just fell apart.
Where do you start when you're trying to take care of yourself in this climate?
You know, people need to realize a couple of things. One, that the outcome was very hurtful because those of us that identify specifically as Black or Latino, we had to sit through hearing a lot of negativity, which was racism from this person that's supposed to represent all people. And that's what the president should do. One of the things that we have to do now, because we remember that and he won, is to become more resilient. And how do you become more resilient when you're upset? One of the things, the first thing I did is I shut off the media. I shut off social media. You have to set boundaries with social media and the news because it can be overwhelming. And you don't want to overwhelm yourself or saturate yourself with hearing the negative things that are still being spewed by him, still being said by those that some of the people who identify as Republican, you know, even in politics. So you want to set specific limitations in your exposure. After a while, you'll be able to come back recharged, to start being more resilient again and also getting back in the fight for equality.
What's some advice there to just for people not to isolate and not get so caught up in feeling alone?
As far as mental health goes, I'm okay if people need to take time off just to kind of be realistic with how you feel. You always want to be realistic about how you feel because we get into trouble when we don't do that. When we say to ourselves, oh, we're okay, we're going to continue to go to work, I'm sad, but I'm just going to brush it off, we create more anxiety. Our bodies can't help. Our bodies cannot take the amount of anxiety sometimes that we put on ourselves, and we start getting sick. We start shutting ourselves down. Our body will let us know that it's too much. So if you have to take a day off work, you have to take 2 days off of work to manage your stress, that's fine. But what I would like to see you do is to get back going to work, because the way to change your brain is to actually take action. So you get back up and you go back to work. You go back around people. You start to find safe gathering spaces, your friends and family, where you can talk about these things. You start to educate yourself and you build awareness around the things that are important to you for this. For example, in your community, there are probably several associations that you can join that will continue your fight in this battle. For example, the NAACP, there are sororities and fraternities in the area that are probably going to start doing some type of programs to manage our stress. You want to stay connected. So you want to find your tribe, people that will help you and inspire you to get through this process.
And I've even heard it from relatives who will say, I don't understand why everybody's so upset. How does a person who is really feeling this, what is a good way for them to make people understand, I'm not in the same space as you? What's some good language to use there?
There are people who won't understand how you feel. And that's just the bottom line. You have to find people who do understand, where you can amplify your voice and your voice can be heard. And your voice can be safe. There are people who don't understand. I don't know if it's because they didn't think she would win the election, or they are people who suppress their feelings, but that's not the feeling for the majority of people, the majority of us who are very upset about it. So what I would say, if your friends and family aren't quite understanding your feelings, I want you to go and find a place where you can engage with people who do. And that could be social media. You know, even though I want you to set parameters around the type of content that you view via social media, there are still groups on social media where you can actively engage with to help you to understand why you feel that way. You know, I think that group therapy is some of the best therapy that we have, because you have a lot of people around you who may feel the same, but not only do they understand it, but they will help you to fight through it, because they've probably been there and want to lend a voice to you to help you.
What's some long-term advice for folks to find their stride, bring that energy back up as we just continue to settle into our new reality?
Well, I'm going to always promote physical health, always. The part about physical health that we tend to forget is mental health. When you manage your stress through a healthy body and a healthy mind, what happens? Your mental health is improved. There's a ton of research that shows when we exercise, for example, we tend to decrease symptoms of mental health. So I always advocate for having great physical health. The other thing you want to do is you do want to stay connected to the community. You don't want to stay away at all from the community, because once you feel better, once you take the time to set your boundaries, you want to start engaging back in the community. You want to deal with local activism. You want to volunteer your time, even if you volunteer with things that are outside of politics. You want to do these things that support various causes that matter to you. Now, as far as mental health goes, you also, if you just can't control the symptoms, the sadness, if it's too much, if it's happening every day, if you feel like you're in a dark place, it's okay to find a mental health practitioner who specializes in cultural sensitivities they understand Black culture and sensitivities and how these things truly impact, you know, Black people. So you can do those things.
As we maybe slide back and forth, because it's not linear, right? So
right.
If you find yourself getting into one of those despondent moments, or what is something quickly you can do in the moment that's a nice little self-care to maybe turn your day around, turn that moment around?
I'll share with you, one of the reasons I started writing my blogs, even for Psychology Today, that was my way of releasing my tension, to dealing with my feelings. Writing is a great thing to do. You can keep a journal next to your bed. You can write out all of your feelings. You can lay that anxiety right down in a journal and start to sleep better, because you get everything off of your chest. Mindfulness is something else that's very useful, and mental health professionals that specialize in mindfulness can teach you about those things. You can do other personal wellness routines outside of exercising. One of the things that I like to do is travel. You can get back into different things that you like to do. Most of us do have people that we can talk to. Let them know how you feel. Sometimes we will not only isolate ourselves, but we won't talk to people that are close to us about how we feel. So we can lean on other people in our immediate circle to help us, friends, colleagues. And so those are some immediate things that you can do, you know, to help yourself through this situation.
I mean, humans are resilient, so we're going to get there, right? People just need to hear that.
Well, taking care of yourself is being resilient. I think I already said that to you, but I'm going to say it again, because we are designed to handle emotions, all of us. Our bodies are designed to handle it. We will get through this within our bodies. One day we'll wake up and we'll forget about the stress and the concern and the anxiety and the anger and the rage, and we won't be as shocked because we had this already. in 2016. So we know what to expect, even if there's more that's going to happen with this term. We are already prepared to handle it. We are strong people, and yes, we will be okay.
Speaking specifically to the Black community, I've done segments with other mental health professionals who say we don't do the best job at giving ourselves permission to feel that full range. Right. Can you talk a little bit about that and the history behind it? But how do we escape that cycle?
We have to make a conscious effort to break it. It's the easiest way to do it, but it's also hard because society also, in particular with Black women, thinks that we are invincible. I just wrote an article about that. And it is a false perception of women, however we feed into it, Black women, because we do give the impression of, I'm going to be sad, but we're going to keep going. We can do this. You know, we've had no choice but to be strong. And that's what people forget. You know, we can be sad. You know, we can be very anxious about things, but society will view us as not having feelings, or that we're invincible, that we wear a cape on our chest and that we can survive anything, because we have, and we've shown that resiliency. But it's time for us to decrease that and truly embrace our mental health, and that we are not invincible, and that we do cry, and that when we are too stressed, it gives us heart conditions, which is the leading cause of death in Black women. So we do have to not only say no, but to set boundaries with regard to how much we're going to take and what we're going to do about it. I have a personal plan for myself. When I feel like I'm doing too much, I stop. And that's because I care about my mental health. And I tell people no, and I start cutting back on things that I can't do because it's too much and I can feel it. We have to pay attention to our body to manage it. And we're so used to sometimes being tired, and we keep going even when we're tired. We don't take care of ourselves, but you have to realize that you come first, because if we are not okay, what's the old cliche? If mama's not okay, nobody's okay. And that is true.
Kids are hearing these conversations. Kids are seeing their parents have feelings and react. So anything there to say about our kids and what we should be doing for them and their mental health?
Of course, we should tell them the truth. That's a part of research too. Kids are going through different things and they watch us go through it. We tend to want to protect them from death to politics. We need to tell kids the truth. One thing that Vice President Harris did teach us is that you lose with grace.
What is normal in regards to our sadness? We talked about seeing a mental health professional if you feel like you need to, but how long is too long to be sad?
That's a good question. Election grief. That's what it's called. Election grief. And so any grief, any sadness, however, you got to normalize sadness versus depression. We all get sad. We all aren't depressed. Depression is different. But I would say my hope is that no one will be clinically depressed over the election. But if you are, a year is too long. And that is clinical depression, someone being feeling dark and sad, helpless, hopeless. For me personally, 3 months is too long, but we do have, you know, criteria that we have to use to diagnose depression. Sadness is different because everyone feels sad. Everyone grieves. Everyone loses trust. This is a situation where we lost trust. Not just in the election process, but in how people perceive us. Those things are typical with grief. You have denial, you have anger, you have bargaining. This can't be true. She couldn't have lost the election. Then you have sadness or depression. And you also have acceptance, accepting. We're not there yet. We're getting to the point where we're going to have to start accepting the outcome. So you monitor yourself. If other people around you, or if you start to feel as if you are in a dark place, and I mean literally dark, where you can't see anything but darkness, you are feeling hopeless, sad, suicidal, helpless, then it's time to get help.
collectively, as everyone, you know, tries to move forward, is there anything I didn't touch on or any other tidbits or tips that you would like to offer folks who may just not be feeling it?
Yeah, process your feelings of disappointment. It's all right. I think it's a great thing to do that. I've had to do that. Other people have had to do that around me. If you're frustrated, be frustrated. Allow yourself to rest and become renewed, because we still need you, because we still have a finish line here. It's not finished. Not finished at all. Take an emotional and mental break from all of it. Make sure you do that to help you come back with a clearer perspective and also fresh energy, because we still need your energy.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lisa, for joining us on this episode of Dialogue.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
That was IPM's Tanisha Spain with Dr. Lisa Chambers. She's a psychologist and lecturer in higher education. If you are in need of help, you can call the Suicide Prevention Hotline at 988. Writer and activist James Baldwin is a household name in America. Michelle and Doug Lucello is coming to Champaign-Urbana to bring his messages back to life in music.
And we use his writing sort of as segues to remind people of his brilliance and also his prophetic understanding about what's happening in this country.
Michelle talks with IPM's Reginald Hardwick when Dialogue returns after this break. I'm Kennedy Vincent. I cover Black and immigrant communities for IPM News. Whether you live in Garden Hills or Douglas Park, work at Kraft, Parkland, or the U of I, your stories matter. Listen for them on AM 580, FM 90.9, and FM 101.1, Illinois Soul.
Audre Lorde said, "If I did not define myself for myself, I'd be crunched into other people's fantasies and eaten alive." Audre Lorde said, "There is no single issue struggle because we do not live single issue lives."
Thus saith the Lord.
For decades, singer-songwriter, poet, and bassist and producer Michelle Andeglicello has blessed us with an unmistakable voice, plus mesmerizing lyrics and instrumentation. And on January 28th, Michelle will perform at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting No More Water, The Gospel of James Baldwin. And I'm honored to talk with Michelle right now. Welcome to Illinois Public Media.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
During your NPR Tiny Desk concert in 2024, you quoted James Baldwin.
James Baldwin said that you think your pain and your heartbreak are unprecedented in the history of the world, but then you read.
How do you reflect on that quote as you're coming to Central Illinois?
Oh, I think often people flippantly say, if you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. And I think that's starting to fall on deaf ears. I think I was a person who really was like, what do you mean? We need to be in the moment and constantly looking so-called forward. But I think after reading The Fire next time, I realized how important it was for me to read my elders, have a better understanding of history, so that the experience that I am having now wouldn't be so daunting. It wouldn't be a shock. And also that understanding the stories, whether it's fiction or nonfiction of the past, gives you a better understanding to the commonality and constancy of a certain type of oppression, a certain type of bigotry, a certain type of power grab that I think all of us are sort of saying, like, the world is so much better. And yes, it is. But I think I look back on that saying, and it was just that quote, it was a wake-up call for me to be more engaged with my elders and with history.
As we know, Baldwin was a legendary writer and activist, and he would have turned 100 years old in 2024.
I don't know what most white people in this country feel, but I can only include what they feel from the state of their institutions. I don't know if white Christians hate Negroes or not, but I know that we have a Christian church which is white and a Christian church which is black. I know, as Malcolm X once put it, that the most segregated hour in American life is high noon on Sunday. That says a great deal for me about a Christian nation. It means that I can't afford to trust most white Christians and certainly cannot trust the Christian church. I don't know whether the labor unions and their bosses really hate me. That doesn't matter, but I know I'm not in their unions. I don't know if the real estate lobby is anything against black people, but I know the real estate lobbies keep me in the ghetto. I don't know if the Board of Education hates black people, but I know the textbooks they give my children to read and the schools that we have to go to. Now, this is the evidence. You want me to make an act of faith, risking myself, my wife, my woman, my sister, my children, on some idealism which you assure me exists in America, which I have never seen.
How does your show pay homage to him?
Oh, I think I try to maintain clarity that these are songs inspired by his writing. And we use his writing sort of as segues to remind people of his brilliance and also his prophetic understanding about what's happening in this country in terms of race and class and gender. I just want people to see it as a gateway, an introduction, an invitation to his work. If you want to better understand where we are in as people in this moment in time in history.
Would you keep me in the trouble?
Just be right here, right now. We can't lose our way. Struggle starts now, right here today. We talk about the truth. It's time to make a change. Put our aching hearts to use.
What's another word for trouble? 'Cause that's what we're in. Everyone's down for the struggle until it begins. Pain makes you humble, hurt is hard to sing. What's another word for trouble?
What would you say to him if you had a chance to sit down?
Oh, I love you. I would just say I love you and thank you for all of that, the humanity that you put in your writing, all that you shared of yourself that was so deeply personal that aided me in not feeling so alone. I would just say I love you so much. I'm so grateful for your time on earth. You know?
As a black queer man myself, I find that James Baldwin and his boldness of being so open at that time is very inspirational.
Yes, and I get teary. It's embarrassing. But imagine him and Barrett Rustin were kept from participating in the March on Washington due to limited understanding. And I think we can see now how that's a detriment. He had such a clear message. And he says, love has never been a popular movement. But I think we really need to understand where he was coming from now.
Anticipating a chance to run into you. City of 4 hours. One day even sat through a rain shower. For just a glance, a chance to talk to you. You probably wonder how I even know you. For now, you're just my dream. When I wake, I hope you talk to me.
Here I sit outside.
We're here at Illinois Public Media. We have our NPR station, we have our classical music station, and I'm in the studio of our Illinois Soul station, which is Black music and news. And there's not a day that goes by that we are not playing one of your songs from incredible, iconic Plantation Lullabies from 30 years ago. Will some of the songs on that album be included in your show in Krannert, or?
Oh, no. Actually, we play mostly of the Baldwin music since it's a long piece of music, and I appreciate that. But hopefully you'll be kind enough today to play either Trouble or Love from the Baldwin Project so I can introduce people into where I am now and see, wow, that Plantation Lullabies was such a strong building block for me. And now instead of being an angry young person, I'm really seeing that and praying that love unifies us. And I'm so grateful to everyone who has bought tickets and shared what they have. I'm so happy this is my livelihood. But yeah, come out with an open mind and come share some experience with us, a loving experience with us.
You won a Grammy in 2024.
And the Grammy goes to the Omnicord Real Book, Michelle Angelo.
What is it like to still be producing and being awarded for your art 30 years after your iconic album?
Oh, I'm so humbled by it. So humbled that I never thought I'd get this far in terms of age and, you know, my experience through time and space. But it's just always, I have such gratitude that anyone listens to what I make. So I just try to just stay clear and humble. I'm just grateful.
Do you have a favorite genre of music? Yours covers so many genres. And what do you listen to?
Oh, my God, a favorite genre. That's funny. No, I like some days I'm listening to all soundtracks. Last week I was really on an Aretha Franklin tangent. And then some days I'm listening to Fugazi and, you know, independent punk music, or I really love the new Salt record. I don't know if you get a chance to listen to that. It's some of the most beautiful soul and rhythm and blues music I've heard in a while. Really, really inspires me, these young people, spiritually. But yeah, I like, you know, my father was in the military, so we listened to the military radio when I was growing up. So I listened to everything. And then I got to WOL in D.C., so I really got into soul. But I'm old enough to remember when radio wasn't so segregated. So I think that really does affect me. I like it all, you know, I must say.
Feeling so good, good. What you gonna do with me? I know how to go. I know how to flow. What's that? Who's that? Hey, hey. I know what you see. I know what you need. Drop that attitude. Get in that gratitude. Big butt, that's for you. Pack it up, that's for you. I don't want any issues. Keep it moving. I'll keep
January 28th, you're here at Krannert. What is your pitch to folks to come if they haven't already bought a ticket? And I know there are lots of tickets sold.
If you have the means, please come. It's uplifting. It's thought-provoking. We work with a singer who's from Gary, Indiana, named Justin Hicks, who, I don't know, he really can change the air in the room and change the spirit in your heart. I think my band is one of the best bands playing music right now, not to be arrogant. And if anything, come celebrate Baldwin. Like, he needs to be celebrated. And like I said, if you have the means, or if you know someone else who would be interested, buy them a ticket. If it's not for you, it's that kind of concert. It's to hopefully show you that sharing is love, and we really need that kind of love right now.
Michelle and Degloccello, we appreciate your generosity with your time, and we wish you safe travels as you make your way here to Champaign-Urbana and the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. I'll see you there.
And that's this week's Dialogue. Tell us what you think about our show by giving us a call at 217-244-1989. Dialogue's producer and host is Kennedy Vincent. I'm Reginald Hardwick, News and Public Affairs Director at Illinois Public Media. Dialogue and Illinois Soul are brought to you by Illinois Public Media, a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We'll talk to you next time.